This is the least prepared we've ever been for an episode.
I feel very unprepared right now. I don't know why.
Here we go.
All right, here we go. What? I'm sorry. Here we go. I can't, there's people on the other side of this wall that I know that are like, why does he always, once a week, he just shouts 1, 2, 3, 4. All right.
To himself. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. If they could only see you. All right. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yes. There we go. That was the one.
That was the one. We are in episode 160, dude.
I know, this is crazy, mate. This is becoming like a thing, mate. What should we do for the 200th?
The 200th? Shut it down.
Well, yeah, shut it down.
Game over.
It's like when you're a band, when you're your biggest, go out when you're your biggest, leave them wanting more.
It's like your 27th season in the NFL. You finally win the Super Bowl. Don't sign another contract. Bail. Be like, thank you. I'm leaving on top. So at 200 episodes, we bounce. It's funny. Every time I see one of those podcasting stat things, they're like, only 10% people make it to the 5th episode and 5% make it to the 20th episode and 1% make it to the 30th episode. I'm thinking, dude, we're at 160. Get an award? What's going on?
There must be an award somewhere for something that we've done on this podcast. Do you know what I mean? Like...
There should be something that's like an A for effort. Like, hey, you guys haven't been very good, but you're sure as hell committed.
Yeah.
So here's a, I don't know, like a belt. I'd like a belt.
That's 160 hours of talking.
And not really good talking. Just talking.
just talking. Just talking, mate. There we go. Anyway,
I've got something to talk to you about. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, what have you been up to, mate? It's not like we didn't send each other 8 voice notes yesterday.
Starting at 5 a.m.
Yep.
A lot of practice. Finished up the intermediate curriculum, finished up the advanced curriculum. So just been practicing those things. And then I am leaving on Thursday morning for a show Thursday night. So that's April 4th. If you guys are listening to this in time, if you are in the Southern California area, I'm playing a show at the Whiskey A Go-Go with Simon Says on April 4th. Should be fun. We're actually playing with a band that we did a full US tour with called Boy Hits Car. So that'll be cool because I haven't seen those guys since, 2002.
Wow.
Man, this whole thing is so surreal.
Yeah,
just so surreal.
Is it bringing back like emotions that you felt before, or like written, or nice new ones? Or
I would say nice new ones. One thing that I realized, so I've talked about a lot on the podcast, so I don't need to rehash it, but I left the band in a poor way. And it's taken 20 years to rebuild these relationships, and not even to rebuild it, not like chipping away. It's more like 20 something years for everybody to be like, how about we drop all of it and just start over? And so that's where we're at. We're all in a good place. But the thing, and I don't know your age when this happened to you, and I don't know how you guys handled it, and I'd love your perspective. But what I just realized today in the shower while thinking about, like, well, what am I sorry for? Like, was I just a dick? Like, that's fine. That's easy. But it seemed like it sure didn't seem like it at the time. I was going through some complicated stuff. What I realized was if you have the slightest bit of ego, and then you get a multi-million-dollar record deal, you are a poor human being. Like, a terrible human. Not poor. Terrible. And I just say, I was 21 years old when that happened. And I think it just intensified the negative sides of my personality. It enabled me to be more of a jerk when I shouldn't have been. And so, I don't know. Did you guys... I mean, you probably wouldn't have even noticed it, but do you remember changing at all, going from like local band to like signed band? Or did anyone, you don't have to call out band members, but did, because they would be calling out me. Like, I was the one that was like, boom, killing it.
It's an interesting one. I think all that happened to me and maybe the rest of the lads, but is you just live in this naive bubble of like not really thinking ahead. I never thought ahead at all. Like, when we were like signed and we put our first album out on Island Records, like all I was thinking about, well, I wasn't thinking at all. And that was, when I look back now, I wish I did, because we could have thought about, investing money, or all right, well, let's not be signed again to a major label. Let's do like a memberships type thing or whatever. It was just a lack of thinking, mate. You're in this bubble and you think it's never going to pop and you're naive to like real life essentially. And you just go with the flow every single day. And I think that's what happened to us. We were like, we're legends, mate. Like nothing can go wrong. Nothing can happen.
In the beginning, you are local legends. And that's how it was like, there was a newspaper article because there was no social media. This was, you know, at the time that the Pony Express dropped off your mail. But there was a newspaper article that says Simon Says signs multi-million dollar record deal. So everyone in town, I mean, you just go to get some ice cream and they'd be like, nice job, buddy. Nice job. You know, it's like, it was crazy. And then you get out there and you're like, we will kill it in Poughkeepsie. And there's seven people. And I don't know if you guys experienced that. Like, okay, we're LTA in England, but now let's try it in Spain. Let's try it in America. Yeah. I mean, you guys came over here for a little bit, right?
Yeah, we did. We did like the two or three really long tours supporting the heaviest bands known to man in a trailer on a bus tour.
So van and trailer, but everyone else has buses.
Oh yeah. So we're driving through the night, arriving at the venue in the morning and everyone else has had a good night's sleep. And we're like, yeah, we haven't stopped. We also crashed. We've also had our passport stolen off us. Oh mate, it was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. We were in, where were we? In Montreal? No. Yeah, Montreal maybe. And all of our passports and money got stolen. All of our merch money, our passports, cameras. So we couldn't get home. And then we had to go to an embassy in Texas.
How old were you guys?
We were...
like mid-20s?
Early 20s, yeah. Early 20s. Oh. 21, 22.
Yeah.
Like, mate, like just...
I love it.
We basically, the promoter told us when we arrived at the venue, right, it's a bit of a dodgy area. Bring all your belongings in. Cool. No problem. Did the show, packed up, put all the belongings back in the van, basically. Went probably 10 yards, not even. Just across the street to say to the other bands, like, right, when we get through the border, because we were going back to America, let's stop at the first Walmart, we'll sleep there. Cool. Came back and the little keyhole had been popped in. Everyone ran to look for their things and... we all naturally look for your own things. And we went, yeah, well, I'm good. I haven't had anything stolen. My bag's still here. And then Ben, the guitar player, was like, my laptop bag has been stolen. And we were like, oh, mate, that's so bad. Your laptop. And he went, yeah, but also like £3,000 and our passports were in that bag. So we just split up. We just started running. And just in the hope that they're throwing the passports. Then Ben went up
to like a movie,
the scariest people in the world, and was like, give us our effing money back. And we were like, whoa, they might not be the guys. So then, yeah, couldn't get through the border that night. And then ended up trying to fight our way through the border the next morning, made it to the next show. But then when the tour was over, we were told that we could fly back home to England on these documents we got from the American embassy to get through to America. Obviously we couldn't. So they denied us on our flights. We had to tweet, can anyone drive us to this embassy in Texas, like 8 hours away? And then this one Christian couple who like followed us on Twitter, they loved hardcore bands, were like, yeah, we'll do it. So we waited there for like a day. They came and picked us up, drove us 8 hours to Texas, stayed at another friend's house for like 3 or 4 days, finally got the passports, went home. It was crazy. That was just one tour. The second tour was even crazier.
Oh my God. Yeah. I love that stuff. I absolutely love that. That is literally what bonds all of us together. And when people say like, you have to walk the walk, all this stuff, it's like, I don't know how to express it to like, a drum teacher or a music teacher in general that hasn't had the chance to do it yet. It's like, this isn't going to make you any better at the drums, but you still have to go through all this stuff. Yeah. Like you have to share these stories. You have to know, do you have to? No, of course not. But there's just something that bonds everybody together when they know the difference between a Prevo and a coach bus. And like the one thing, like when people say like, well, everyone had a bus, but we had a van and trailer. When you don't know what that means, it seems like, okay, so you didn't have great accommodations. It's like, no, those buses come with drivers. What it means is that the whole band slept. we have to drive the van. The van doesn't come with a driver. We are the drivers.
Yeah.
So you have to be like, Tom, are you good? I'm good. And it's like, do you want me to take over? No, I'm good, man. Like,
oh, it's the worst, mate.
There's like nine little empty 5-hour energy shots on the dash. Yeah. And like a monster.
Eating like pumpkin seeds to keep you awake like a true trucker. And like, we're waiting for England. We don't know where we're going. We're just following this little sat nav going, okay, it's 3:30 a.m. It says New York is 7 hours away. Yep, we're almost there, guys. We're almost there. Have a nice little sleep. I'll see you in the morning. I've got us tonight.
God.
Yeah, it was crazy, man. Absolutely crazy.
Unreal. Yeah. Unreal. Well, yeah. So as far as your question, no, it's not bringing up any good memories. No, it's honestly just what it's brought up is like how important it is to have good relationships with people that you have a past with. Like we went through so much together and it's like, I've told the guys, you know, for a while now, like I have no dreams for this band whatsoever. My dream was to not be enemies with people that we truly shared some, you know, we went through those same things that you talked about. I mean, I can't even tell you the amount of times I've been pepper sprayed because we were in a band fight and our manager was just way too nervous to ever fight. So he just starts spraying just in general. And I'd be like, Ryan, like you can't do like, I'm in the scrum.
That is amazing. That is so good.
So yeah, we've been through all those things.
Oh, your mic. I think your mic's not. There you go.
How about now? Yeah,
you're back.
That
now.
Was weird. So, anyways, that's the secret to drumming.
Exactly, mate. The pepper spray is so American to me. That is like because we don't have that. That just reminds me of like all of these films. Like, sir, stop.
Dude, it's so out of control. And yeah, it's still there.
Yeah,
And like we had a term for it. Like if we were going to get into a little something with another band or just some locals, we would say, all right, you want to go outside and have a pep talk? And that meant, all right, guys, make sure you have your pepper sprays all attached to your belt because we're going to pep these guys. So we'd have a pep talk.
That is brilliant, mate. Yeah, so exactly. You've been through some things with these guys. Do you know what I mean? You ups and downs. And mate, being in a band is the biggest roller coaster in your entire life because you think being self-employed and being a musician and just being growing up is a roller coaster. Do all of that, all of those things at the exact same time and inject fame, I guess money, not for us really, but...
The potential for money is the same as money sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
You think it's right on the cusp.
Yeah. So I agree with you, man. It's a crazy time.
We're both married. Imagine marrying three women at the same time. That's what being in a band is like.
Yeah.
It's just a marriage, but with four of you.
And all the guys are saying, well, that would be amazing. But I'm telling you.
No, it's not. Well, I don't know. I've never been married to three women, but I can tell you, I've basically been married to three dudes. And there are parts when it's good, it's good. But when it's bad, it is intensified. Mm-hmm. It is a negative, negative thing. All right, let's get into the episode. Before we get into our main topic of muffling, I had a question for you just out of pure curiosity.
Yep.
All-time favorite YouTube video.
Okay, this is an easy one for me, mate. Easy.
Really?
Yeah, mate, like this is my favorite YouTube video ever. And I don't know whether, you know, it wasn't specifically made for YouTube. So maybe I haven't answered the question specifically, but my favorite.
But you choose to watch this video on that platform.
Yeah, because I believe it's the only place you can now. But
yeah,
it is Metallica, Enter Sandman, live at Moscow in 1991. If you haven't seen this video, people, whether you like Metallica or not, go watch it because this will make you want to pick up drumsticks or a guitar. This will make you want to pick up drumsticks.
Drumsticks. There we go.
Yep. And just play with your mates and put on shows and play shows because it is the most amazing performance ever. It's in front of like over a million people in Russia.
It's insane.
In 1991. It's ridiculous, mate. So
and
good.
What's crazy is like you can't... Whenever we talk about on the podcast how playing a big show is easier than playing a small show, this is the best example of like, you can't see a person. It's a million people. If you ever want to know what a million people look like, go watch this video, because it's just like, and then they bounce all at the same time. And it's hard to comprehend. And one thing I would want everyone to take notice of is the second tower. It's so big that they have to start speakers over again about 300 yards out, because the sound dies off from the stage. So they have to do it again in the middle. And like, mate, it's so good.
It is unbelievable. I've got it on now, right? And it's...
I can just see the smile on your face.
Oh my God, mate. Lars has got his white and black kit. You know, the white kit with the black hardware.
The one.
It's just insane, mate. I mean, they start with Enter Sandman, which is the best opener ever. But yeah, when it kicks in, it is unreal. And I think Pantera definitely supported, but I can't remember who the other supports were. But go and watch that show now if you want some inspo for... You know, music. It's insane.
And everyone put out that same concert as a DVD back in the day, as it was their show. Like, Pantera was like, we don't know who you're talking about. Metallica wasn't on the bill. It was just us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I remember, because we watched the Pantera one and it was like Pantera concert was what it was called.
I remember we supported Linkin Park at a football stadium in Berlin, right?
Wow. And
they had a runway for Chester and the band to use, right? We were specifically told, do not use that runway, whatever you do. Micah Singer, first song, straight down the runway, gets a couple of pictures, boom. That's what we use for our next promo for our tour.
Of course.
Straight on Instagram. Oh, mate.
Just LTA,
genius.
Doing what we do, just playing a gig, not a big deal.
In a stadium. So that's mine, mate. What about yours?
Mine is, I have quite a few since I've been doing the YouTube thing for almost 20 years. But when I just thought about it quickly, the one that came to mind is 5 years old, and it changed the modern trajectory of my career. And it's by Peter McKinnon, and it's just called Camera Basics.
Okay.
So here's what it was, my first time seeing Peter, I think. And if you guys don't know who Peter McKinnon is, which I'm sure you all do, but if you don't, he's an amazing, amazing photographer, happens to also be a great cinematographer and filmmaker. But he really kind of became famous for being the guy that broke it all down for the world on YouTube, as far as cameras and stuff. So I'd seen him before, but I never really took it that seriously. And then I was trying to find out some stuff about ISO. I was trying to get better at making videos, and I was struggling with ISO and shutter speed and aperture, the exposure triangle. And so he just, the video starts and he's eating a bowl of cereal. And he talks about how basically he's taking the exposure triangle and equating it to this bowl of cereal. And he's like, I've got cereal, but it's not cereal, because right now it's just cereal in a bowl, and that's not really cereal. And then he puts milk in it and he's like, now it's a lot closer to cereal, but I can't get it in my mouth. And then he holds up a spoon and he's like, now with milk, the cereal itself in the spoon, now we actually have what we call cereal. And that's what the exposure triangle is like. You need ISO to work with your f-stop or your aperture, to work with your shutter speed, to make it all come together to get good light into your camera. And I just remember, as an obsessive educator, I was like, F you. F you for being that smart to make that analogy. That was so good. I'm so jealous of that. And I was like, oh, that was just money. And I just thought, like, I'm going to watch this a million times in a row because it's just the best thing ever. So And then I started taking everything seriously.
Mm-hmm. I mean, mate, I love stuff like that because I love getting inspiration from other things than drums. We spoke about it a million times, but it's when you draw inspiration from people like him, and then you can kind of use that in your own world. It's just the coolest thing. And mate, he is amazing at like talking about cameras.
He's pretty enigmatic. No, I don't even know what that word means, I'm gonna be honest. But I will say this, like, there was a time 5-6 years ago where I felt like, okay, this is the key for me. I don't ever want to take influence from my own industry, but this guy's only talking about cameras. Now I want to take this and move this over to my industry. But unfortunately, Peter was not an undiscovered thing. And so I started seeing everything he did. you know, photographer reacts to photos, then the whole world took it. Like Peter started all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and like the reacts too, that was all Peter. And every time something would 2 Minute Tuesday, all these things, like within a day, I was like, all right, it's on the drum landscape. So I got to walk away from this one. But what I will say is, this may sound crazy, but I started making YouTube videos in 2005. And it wasn't until 5 years ago that I took anything related to video serious. I never cared. I had a camera that I pressed record on. That was it. I didn't care about lenses. I didn't care about lighting. I just made videos. And like, I hope they were okay. But I, even the edits was annoying to me. And then when I found Peter and started, and then through him found everyone else that does this stuff, that's when I was like, I actually kind of dig this. And I started, well, one, I did the wrong thing, which I hope everyone can equate this to drumming. I bought expensive gear.
Yeah.
Didn't know what I was going to do with it, but I was going to buy it.
Yep.
And then when it, when nothing got any better, I bought more expensive gear because I was like, well, it's probably this, you know what? I should have stepped up for the extra spicy lens. And then I had that realization that I'm like, wait, this is the same as drumming. I don't need, because if somebody came to me and said, hey, the clinic you're doing on Wednesday, all we have is a Gretsch Catalina and some Meinl HCS cymbals, it wouldn't even faze me. I wouldn't even think about it. I'd be like, all right, it's cool. If that's all you got, that's fine. We'll make it work. But with a camera thing, I'd be like, well, if you don't have a Sony Venice, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Peter wouldn't. He'd be like, dude, cool Kodak. Let's go make some art. Mate, you know, so.
It's the, you know, Adrian Pear.
Yeah, of course.
When I said to you, I sent you a text like ages ago saying, oh my God, he uses these lenses. Was that to you or was that to Luke? I can't remember.
Yeah, it was to me. And I think it was also the same camera. It was the ZV-E1.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, flipping hell, he uses these really cheap, cheap lenses. Here's me looking at like these really expensive Sony G Master lenses. And this guy who makes the best videos in a long time is using just like, you know.
Like Tamarons.
Yeah, literally just cheap lenses. It's nice when you see that, man. Because it's also annoying when you see someone who's really good and you go, oh, what have you got? And they have the best of something. You go, oh, well, I need that.
Yeah. And the reason you're the best is because you have that. And it's like, no. Go back.
Yeah.
They were the best when they didn't have that. Mm-hmm. And I've realized that too, that with drum gear, with, you know, preamps and microphones and camera gear, you need the skills to get the best out of the best. The best is usually much worse if you don't know what you're doing, because what makes it the best is its massive amount of versatility, where an iPhone is the best if you don't know what you're doing, because they say, look, you're a child, step away, we'll just take over everything and we'll make it look good. And it does look good. It looks amazing. That's why most people that ask me like, what camera should I get? I just say like, well, how into this are you? If you're not that into it, I wouldn't get any camera. I'd spend money on a decent light and just keep your phone. Your phone is probably the best camera you have.
Yeah, mate. Phones are like, I use just as much as any other camera right now. Like you said, it depends how much you're into it and whatnot. And if you love the process, but yeah, man, crazy. That's wicked. I'll check that video out because I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's a good one. All right, let's get into it. We're talking about drum muffling. This is something I have... Definitely, I had some obsessive times where, just like with the gear we were talking about, if I didn't have the right muffling, it's like, well, you can't play then. I can't play this instrument without this muffling. Then I realized it doesn't matter at all. Then I shunned muffling and I was like, single ply coated heads, no muffling. I don't want to see a piece of tape on a drum. And now I'm somewhere in between. But what brought this topic up was how much that changed as soon as my band said, all right, we got to load out on Wednesday because we have a show. And I was like, oh, well, that's different. I don't get to control the mix anymore. Now there's a sound guy or a girl, and I have to be prepared with my instrument for this. So let's go back in time first. Do you have any early muffling stuff? When you have cheaper drums, muffling is a must because you got to shut down all the terrible overtones.
Yeah, and muffling for me was just gaffer tape. It was just duct tape. Yeah, tape that you just put on every single thing because you were too poor to buy new drum skins. But like you said, the overtones were so harsh. Like this skin would get so worn down that you needed to crank it to get any tone out of it. But with the tone came the horrible overtones. So my whole kit was just like, I mean, pretty much just black gaffer tape over everything, everything, mate. It was pretty shambolic. And I didn't know what I was doing with it then. And I definitely don't know what I'm doing with it now.
Now, did you just go straight tape or did you go ruffles have ridges? Did you make little folds in it?
One little ridge. So like a little bit of the tape sticks together in the middle and then place it down. Is that what you did?
Oh, dude, that's it. Well, because, yeah, we would see it on videos and we're like, I don't know why they're doing that, but I'm going to do that. I'm a triple ridge guy.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I go fold, flat, fold, flat, fold, and that's it.
Have you ever A-B'd it? Do you think the ridges make a difference or not?
No, because if you A-B it, you'll find out that it doesn't matter at all and you don't want to know the truth. You do not want to leave the matrix. You just keep your head down and tell people this matters because I saw Kenny Aronoff do it. So it matters. I know it does.
Exactly, mate. Exactly. But yeah, mate, I kind of just like did it because I had the gear I was using was so, so bad, mate. And I couldn't afford to buy a new drum skin. So yeah, I would crank it and then I would muffle it to the extreme, really. Oh my God. Yeah. Literally everything was just like as tight and as dead as it could be, mate.
I got all of my muffling, my early days. I mean, I started when I was 5, started playing and taking lessons, and then got my first drum set when I was about 5 and a half, 6, and you don't know enough to know anything. But then when I was about, and I was in school band starting at like 6 or so, but I think I wasn't, it was probably like 10 when I actually got into to jazz band that had like a drum set. And that was my first experience with muffling. Like, they had a Premier kit with clear heads and it had these muffles on the inside. Type into your computer or into Google, Remo internal muffle ring.
Okay.
And you will see just the greatest. I mean, this is like Leonardo da Vinci level invention stuff. I'm going to check it out too, because I haven't seen it since the 80s.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
So it goes underneath the drum head. It sits on your actual shell. And then, so when you change the head, it goes on your shell and then you put the head over it.
Okay.
So it's the, the foam.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a little video here of it. I've never seen that before in my life.
So I get to the school and they got those and these drums said, and I was like, hell yes, get me some of that. Could you imagine having a $2,000 drum set and then you put plastic on top of the bearing edge, which is the most important part of the whole thing? You're like, let's get rid of that. Let's take that out of the equation.
That is like putting an Evans EMAD, but even more so on every single drum.
100%.
On the inside.
And then the head on the inside. And the head goes on top of that.
I've never seen that before in my life, mate. That's crazy. So
that was my very first experience with muffling. So I go home and I tell my mom, I don't care. Sell the dog. Sell anything. I need these. These are the greatest things ever because they kill it all. It doesn't. And what I didn't understand is like, yeah, but it also kills it all if you have a good kit. And the good kit now goes, duh. But it was great. So that was like my first experience. Then eventually zero rings kind of made it onto the scene where you're putting the ring on top of the drum, taking it off, little plastic rings. I use those a lot as a teacher. I never used them personally for my playing, but as a teacher, when you're just trying to talk to a drummer that's sitting next to you on a kit, you just want it to kind of be just chilled out a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I love those. Those were great. And then I did the same thing as you. And then I found weather stripping. So weather stripping that would go inside of a door. That's when I was like, so they make this foam that you can get at the hardware store, but it has a sticker backing. So you can just put foam wherever you want. And I put it effing everywhere. I put it in the shell.
That sounds good, mate.
It's amazing.
My ears pricked up then. And I was like, hello. That sounds pretty good.
Let me get on down to the old hardware store and check out some weather stripping. Because, you just peel off the back and it's sticky and then you can just use as much or as little as you want.
That's crazy. So what did you start muffling? Because I only really discovered about muffling when I started to tour and when front of house guys who I didn't know, who weren't friendly, used to say, can you do something about that floor, Tom? And I'm thinking, what do you mean do something? Do something about what? Praise it for how good it is. Do you know what I mean? Like, What are you asking, mate? What are you telling me to do? The horrible ring. Can you get rid of it? Oh, I can't hear that.
Yeah. So, with this key? What? I don't know. No.
That horrible, anxious twist of a drum tuner, of a lug, and you don't know what you're doing, but you're like, I guess this is what he
will this make it better or worse
me to do. So that was when I really discovered like the benefits of muffling in a live setting. Was that the same for you?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, well, one, in live gigs, I still have this problem, and because I'm so PTSD from it. I even do it at drum festivals currently. When they say, all right, give me the floor tom, I literally hit it, and without them seeing, I kind of muffle it with my fingers. It's like, doom. I don't want to be embarrassed in front of JoJo Mayer. So I literally muffle it with my fingers right after I hit it, and they're like, great. Rack Tom, I'm like, hell yeah.
That is so fun. Mate, there's nothing, like I said, I think when you hit your floor tom in front of anyone, it's a very, you feel exposed. You feel like,
totally.
You hit it and you go, oh, that sounds like a shotgun. And then all of a sudden you get, and you go, oh, that was embarrassing.
Oh,
I'm going to be professional here. What's Ludwig? Someone from Ludwig, come over. Take the blame.
Just start shifting the floor tom around, looking at the bearing edge. Yeah, so for me, I think it was probably like, as a local band, I mean, we were probably gigging as kids. I mean, we got together when I was like 15 or 16. So gigging and starting to book our own studio time at like local studios where you pay like, you know, $15 an hour back in the day to make a demo tape. And yeah, that's when, because I would say with live shows, you and the sound guy just like, the sound guy just hates you. And he's like, all right, I'm going to gate your whole kit because you're a terrible person. You're like, oh, I don't know even what that means, but okay. And so it's like, whatever, fine. But when you go into the studio, the producer kind of has the right to walk out of the control room and just start gaffing up your kit.
Yeah.
And they start putting tape everywhere and you're like, what are you doing? And they start making the little folds in the gaff tape. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of when you start to realize, oh, this isn't for how I hear the drums. This is for how your microphones hear the drums. Mm-hmm. And even though I don't actually think this sounds good, it really does sound good to the microphone. So that would probably be like the beginning for me. And then the tough thing is like listening to other drums that you love. But if you're listening to them for the most part, especially through your computer, you're hearing them mic'd. So it's really hard to know like, well, why does it sound like that? I don't see any muffling. And it's like, okay, but that's like going through compressors and EQ and reverb. Mm-hmm. And I'm giving all the credit. I'm like, damn, Pearl's kind of coming up. That's a good sound. You know, and it's like, okay, but that was mixed for 30 hours at a studio in Hollywood. So,
yeah.
You know, it's really tough. I mean, right now I still use muffling now. So my toms have like my rack tom has about 6 cotton balls in it at mm-hmm. all times, and my floor tom has about 8 to 10. And that just basically, when you hit the drum does its thing because the cotton balls jump up in the air and then they settle down and they kill the ring. So it's just an easy way to get rid of the overtone. So it works good in the room that I'm using. So
I've never seen moon gel on your kit ever.
Dude.
Will that
if someone even never?
What about clear moon gel?
Couldn't care. Get away! I do not want that sticky lint grabbing dog hair loving crap anywhere near me. No, and even with like, Meinl was like, hey, we sent a bunch of drum honey out to the campers. I'm like, I'll send it back. I don't even want them to have it.
Like, I tell you what, that drum honey is a good name though. That is a good
it's killer.
Good name.
Great marketing, great product. I mean, because especially as I was coming up through the YouTube world back in the day, that's when the companies that you weren't signed to would reach out and be like, hey, you're not signed to a muffling company. So we're called Drum Dots or we're Drum Stickies or whatever. And I'd be like, man, I get it. I just know, yeah. No, like there's something about gaff tape that looks professional to me. And there's something about gels that look amateur to me. I think it's just because I grew up idolizing professional drummers before gels existed.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think also there's a very, artistic, and I don't give a F vibe about the tape, which then makes it cool. Do you know what I mean? I think
it's the same tape I would use to like fix my shoes when I was ollieing too much and I'd wear a hole in the side of my shoe from skating. It's like, I just wrap the gaff around it, you know, and now I can skate for another 2 weeks before I get new shoes. And so,
yeah,
I don't know. Like I think from the touring world, I like that sound of like, Bobby, you got the gaff. And then a big old roll of gaff flies in, you catch it and you rip it with your teeth. And then you know, and now your drums are better somehow. Yeah, and then you give it back to the guitarist and he slaps some on, you know, it's just like, I don't know. Gaff tape to me is like the winner, especially now that you can actually get it at like Amazon, where back in the day you had to go to a production house or a music shop and hope they had gaff tape, because duct tape and gaff tape are not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very different animals. One leaves just a trail of terror behind. Like if duct tape and sun talk to each other, whatever it's on, it's over. It's game over. just turns into freaking porridge. Gaff tape can handle a little bit. And the fact that it's always been matte black, mm-hmm. Come on.
I know. It is cool. I mean, at the minute, so on my kit, and I've got the Vista Light, and I will admit, it is hard to tune, I think.
Okay.
Like, because the 12 inch is, I want some tone out of it, but then it does get to the point where it sounds a bit too thin. So I have to reduce it. But by reducing it, it has got like a tone there. So I at the minute, I've got two moon gels on the high tom, two moon gels on the floor tom, and it sounds perfect.
And are you actual moon gels, like blue?
No.
Like going moon gel company? Okay, no, you have two gels.
Oh, yeah, just white clear. Gels. Just clear.
Okay.
Just clear. Yeah, not white, sorry, clear. It has to be.
It's like, they make white gels? These are awesome. I would use those.
Because there we go, mate. Let's take this Patreon money and put it into some white gel, shall we?
Yes.
So it has to be clear because everything on this kit is clear now, you know? So it has to be clear. But yeah, I've got two on the high tom, two on the floor tom, and that kind of works out well. And then regarding muffling, what I've got in the kick drum is, I don't know the correct name for them. You might know, you probably will know, but they are like the foam inlays that curve around the kick drum. And then there's a middle bit where the mics can sit on.
Oh, wow. I've never even heard of that. I mean, it sounds like studio foam, but it sounds like it's specifically made for a bass drum.
Yeah, exactly. So kick drum muffler. There we go. It is called, it's just loading. It's called the Kicker. The Kicker Pillow. And Kicker 2.0 is what I've got by Sonatist Acoustic. But yeah, the Kicker Pillow. And honestly, mate, I have never experienced something so good in my life regarding a kick drum.
Really?
Can you see it there?
Oh, look at that thing. Yeah.
Honestly, mate, if you've got the same mic as me, the flat one, the flat pancake mic.
Yeah.
It is the best thing I've ever had. It doesn't kill the tone. The mic sits on top of it and it's got a tape on it, Velcro, so it doesn't move. And it's just enough. Even Steve, who does front of house for Busted, was like, mate, that thing's amazing. It's a game changer. Because I felt so overexposed with the clear kick drum. I couldn't just have random hoodies and old LTA merch in there. I had to have something that looked nice. And honestly, it's a game changer. So £24, don't know what that equates to in dollars, but if you need something for the kick drum, the Kicker Pillow is a game changer, and it fits like a glove. So you can get different dimensions, 22 by 16, 22 by 18, 22 by 14, and so on.
Bro, I don't know if we have this in the US. I'm trying to find it, but it's, you guys are cute.
Wow, how much
are
you talking?
Wow. It's double. It's $60 at Musician's Friend, but that's I think it might even,
wow.
This is Sonatist Kicker 4.0.
I wonder what they did with the variations in that. But
it looks like everything is totally removable. So it's the same thing, but it's got a bunch of parts that you can remove, which I kind of dig because you might get it and find out it's too much.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
But they do have it in the right sizes. Like I can buy it in a 20 by 14, a 20 by 16, 22 by 22.
I mean, it's you like, I've got a clear kit, obviously, like I've said 15,000 times in a row for some reason, but you can't really, it's weird. You don't notice it, if that makes sense. Like you don't see it and go, what's that thing in your kick drum? So yeah,
it looks very purposeful.
Yeah, it is. It is very, very good. So that's what I'm using at the minute. So what have you got on your bass drum?
Everything you just made fun of. I've got a hoodie, sweatshirt, and a pillow, and t-shirt, and
That is brilliant, mate. But everyone's the same. It's just when you have a clear kit, just
Well, you have a not only do you have a clear kick drum. I don't know if you mentioned it yet, but you have a clear drum set. But not only do you have that, but you also have a clear bass drum head. That's the big difference. Is I don't have a clear bass drum head.
Yeah, exactly.
But here's the problem. So I get it all dialed. I get it all just sweet. It's all in there, laid how I want it. And then I play for a little bit. And there's always like a little sleeve of a hoodie coming out of my bass drum port. Like, I'm like, how do you keep is there a hand in there? And I hate to say it, but it's a hoodie of somebody. Somebody gave me the hoodie and like, it was a gift. And it's like, but I'm never going to wear this, but I don't want them to come to camp and be like, oh, is that the I Love Utah hoodie? And I'm like, no. By the way, heads up, everyone. It's not an I Love Utah hoodie.
If you buy me
an I Love Utah, like I'll wear whatever. But anyways, yeah. So I am gonna buy this thing. I love it.
Mate,
I love the idea of it.
A good point. Like when I used to move my kit around quite a lot, but every time I put my kick drum back in, it would sound different because the muffling had moved. Do you know what
100%.
I mean? 100%. And as much as you try and get your hand in there and give it a little, you know, a little, I don't know what I'm doing with my hands.
A little wiggle.
A little wiggle, a little wash, a little thing. It's never actually going to be in the same place. So it will sound different. But yeah, it's great, man. I recommend that kicker so a lot, basically.
That's awesome. I will definitely check it out. Yeah. And then snare, are you going gels? Do you go tape?
Mate, that acrylic, yet again, I'm just that guy. Do you know what I mean? I've got a see-through snare now.
You do.
But it's pink.
But it's pink.
It's pink.
Yeah.
See-through pink snare. Yeah, that thing needs some gels, mate. That is a...
Kang!
Woo-wee! That needs some gels. So yeah, I've got just one moon gel on there. What about you? What have you got on your snare?
It depends. So if it's my normal Brooklyn standard, then it has an internal muffle. And so I'll just literally get... It's so perfect that the furry bits of felt are the only thing that touches. It's just like, hey, we're just here if you need us, but it's not pressed up against it because that's the big problem with internal muffles. A lot of people don't know this or don't think about it, but if you put any pressure from that muffle going upwards, you have detuned the drum. Well, you've actually made it tighter, but you've ruined the tuning. You've pressed against the head and it's not an even tuning anymore. So the only way to use those things really is to make sure that they're barely touching. So I'm not trying to get rid of the ring. I actually like ring. I'll just make it take out like 20% of the overtone. But right now I've got that prototype snare, the one that you played when you were here, the matte black brass one.
Yeah.
That's been on my kit for a while now and I have it's single ply head, no muffling whatsoever. A lot of it, I'm sure you know this, but a lot of it just comes down to the room you're in. I'm sure a lot of arenas, like, you know, your snare might be crazy in that tiny room, but then you get it into an arena and it's like, I thought this was a ringy snare, you know, and it's dead. It's like, well, there's nothing for it to bounce off of.
Yeah.
Really just depends. I think that most importantly, muffling should be seen as a way to get your drums closer to sounding how they need to sound for the situation. If you want wide open, you know, I'd be bummed if I went to go play like a little jazz kit at a jazz jam and they'd muffled the drums. It's like, dude, the whole point of this is I want to hear the tone of this instrument.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you have to play differently. You don't get to play like you're playing a rock concert, you know? And I'd also be really bummed if I was trying to do a really articulate fill, super fast, big old chops, and the drums were so ringy, it just melted together. I want to hear the definition of the notes. So you do need muffling for that.
Mate, and also like how you play as well, because I set up my second see-through clear kit. Don't know if I mentioned that, but I had...
Wow. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So good. So I had a lesson yesterday and I set up my kit.
Oh, my God. Sorry. I just hit one of my 7 A&F snares. I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
I set up my second kit and it's gone. I'm trying so hard to not sound like I'm just being that guy, but everything I say right now is I'm just that guy.
It's all good. It's over.
It came with the like Ludwig original kit. I'll lift it up to the camera. You might know what. Just cracked it. It's the one with the big silver hoop.
Oh yeah, the black dot.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So
that's a Remo Power Stroke 3.
There we go. So it's very and there's no hole on the other side. Me no likey.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a jazz bass room at that moment.
Yeah, it was horrific. I was like, okay, mate, we're just going to sort of trade some fills. Quickly, within 3 seconds, found out that tuning and muffling is a part of my identity now, mate.
Yes.
Everything, yeah. The stars need to align for me to play how I play.
Well, okay, so think about it like this, though. Like, if you were playing a Bonham thing and going, boom, boom, cat, cat, the boom, boom, it'd be great. But if you're playing some chops and playing some articulate stuff, you just can't hear them. Like all the notes kind of. So I don't see muffling as, I never see it as a negative or anything like, oh, did you muffle your drums? I just see it as a way to achieve the sound you want. I think companies, I mean, it's amazing that we have companies that are literally built around muffling, like Drum Dots, Moon Gel, Big Fat Snare Drum. I mean, they have like literally crushed that whole entire thing of like, well, we nailed it. Like, especially if you have a cheaper snare drum and you have gigs and you need to like drop the tuning really quick, you throw a big fat snare drum on your snare for the one ballad song that's in the set, you're good to go.
Yeah.
Like, that's an amazing product. So I think we're in a really good place, but I guarantee when you get here for the next camp we do, I'm going to have those Remo internal muffles installed on at least one kit so you can... Because they are special.
Mate, I really want to try them out, mate. I really want to try
amazing.
Them out. Yeah, just stick one on the 7 ANF snares you got, you know. Just
I was kidding, everybody. I have 8. All right. So just to be clear, the thing that we talked about as far as the kick muffling is called Sonitus. So S-O-N-I-T-U-S. So it's Sonitus Acoustics and it's called the Kicker. So there's the 2.0 and apparently it goes all the way up to the 4.0. I'm definitely going to order one of these because I've been really unhappy. Exactly what you said. I've been really unhappy with the consistency of my muffling because I've been swapping out my white kit, with the band for the blue kit for me. Mm-hmm. Every time I put that blue kit out there, my hoodies and t-shirts have moved. And I'm like, oh no. Or even worse, oh yeah, now I can't move anything ever again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's perfect.
Exactly.
So yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love the idea of the consistency. That's awesome. Yeah. All right, everybody. We hope you enjoyed this. We hope you get a chance to hang here. I'm going to edit all that out. Thanks for listening. Head over to the Patreon page. Links in the description below.
Yep. We need some more money.
I'm honestly ordering this thing for the kick right now. Everyone, thank you guys for listening. We appreciate you. We appreciate your support. We love you all. And we'll see you next week.
Boom. See you there. Bang. That's what you do. Introduce them to 2 banging videos, some muffling, some good stories. Just another. Doing God's work, mate.
Doing God's work, teaching them that being in a band is like being married to 3 women. It's